This is Booth Street. Next stop is Osborne. End of the line. The next stop is the end of the line.
I'm gonna do a big, nice clap for you.
Yeah.
You want to say poop every time.
Every time.
Every time
every
you want to say poop.
Every single time.
We're a thinking man's podcast.
Very intellectual here.
Hey, everybody. Happy Halloween, and welcome back once again to Podcast Part 3, the Part 3 Podcast, your go-to source for all things about movies that came after two other movies. As always, I am Sam.
And I am Will.
And we are wrapping up October with another horror movie, another Shriekwool Threequel, and we are talking about 2006's Final Destination 3, directed by James Wong and written by James Wong and Glenn Morgan, starring Mary Elizabeth Winstead and some other people.
Some other people doing a lot of work.
My wife walked in to me watching this movie in the first 10 minutes and said, "Is this a parody of something set in the 2000s?" And I said, "No, honey, this is as real as it gets."
This movie is so 2006. It like actually gave me nostalgia for 2006.
I was almost disappointed when it showed a sense of self-awareness, because otherwise I was like, "Where's all the new metal?"
All the new metal, the flip phones, everything that Mary Elizabeth Winstead wears.
Everything
in this movie,
all the girls are wearing. They're all wearing just those low-rise yoga pants that all right. The like hot girls in school were wearing. I felt so seen by this movie. Everyone had the Bieber hair, but like before Bieber, you know.
It's so funny because I don't always think of the like the mid 2000s like as a distinct look. It sort of feels like a vague blob in my mind. But then when I watch this movie, it's like it's
the exact that. Window that you and I were in high school is kind of that window where there is not really like a definitive high school movie. American Pie is a little too early. Mean Girls is right after the fact. So there, I don't ever always feel like there's one that's like, yeah, that's me. Like
yeah, the mop hair is in full effect. Everyone looks like they've got mops for head.
The cargo pants and the puffy vest and oh man, it's like this in Freddy versus Jason. Just
they're so 2000. So Freddy versus Jason, I guess, is a little earlier, right?
Only that's a few like years. Freddy versus Jason is 2003. This is 2006. Yeah. Celebrating the graduating class of 2005. So let's get into it. Final Destination, a franchise that has been humming along now for 25 years. The newest one came out over the summer, Final Destination Bloodlines. The first one came out in 2000 and was, I think, sort of a late arrival from the Scream slasher era. It's definitely that look and feel, even if it's not like exactly a slasher movie.
Right. Well, I mean, it is a slasher movie in that all the characters basically walked out of a slasher movie. It's just the killer is a Rube Goldberg device.
Yeah, the killer is not tangible. It's an off-screen sadistic Rube Goldberg. Yeah, but it's the James Wong directed the first one and co-wrote it with Glenn Morgan, and I didn't know this till I was doing a little homework for this episode, but it was originally written by the co-writer, Jeffrey Reddick, as a spec script for The X-Files.
Oh,
and when
okay.
I think about that, I'm like, absolutely this is an X-Files episode.
Yeah.
Absolutely this is an X-Files episode.
Yeah, you can totally see like where you would, I mean, this we're talking about the third one, but you could totally see where, you know, Mulder and Scully would sort of enter into the story and investigate and talk to all the kids and, you know, how they would, you know, figure it. I don't know. Yeah.
It's not as unusual as you'd think, Scully. Ancient myth often describes death as having a design, a tapestry. If it were to skip a step, it would feel compelled to complete the loop, you know, if it felt cheated. And she'd be like, "Mulder, a roller coaster crashed." And, you know. And then just a bunch of really Canadian day players would be there. And, you know.
Yeah, you know, this is a movie that I feel, this is a movie series that I feel like I've seen, mainly because it seems like the trailers for these movies were in front of every movie I saw during the years they were being released.
Well, the next two, The Final Destination, which is from that era where sequels started having the same title as prior movies, and Final Destination 5 were like right in the 3D boom, and they really pushed that hard with those two movies.
Yeah, and like this one, I remember seeing the roller coaster derailment over and over again, pretty much, because when you're in college and you don't have anything really better to do on the weekends, we just saw movies.
Yeah,
I saw so many movies. Almost everything.
And this was a February 2006 movie. We would have been doing nothing.
Yeah, so I saw the trailer for this movie before everything I saw, pretty much like 6 months before February 2006, or whenever it dropped.
I think it was like a Valentine's Day weekend release in 2006.
Oh,
it was the same month as such luminaries as the Pink Panther remake with Steve Martin, the When a Stranger Calls remake, what do we got here? We've got Dougal, Running Scared with Paul Walker, Madea's Family Reunion, future Academy Award winner Sootsie, and I didn't even know they made a Stuart Little 3, but Stuart Little 3, so that we may be on the hook for Stuart Little 3 now.
But is Sootsie a holdover from...
That might have been from the prior year.
The prior year, but... Oh man, what the doldrums of Hollywood February.
Yeah, people forget that like January and February were just a combination of just crap that they knew wasn't going to do well and awards movies that had gotten a limited release the prior year, because nowadays awards movies are all on streaming. But back then it was like, I'm looking at it, it's like, yeah, January 20th, 2006, Underworld Evolution, Trans America, you know?
Yeah, the awards play that has now moved into wide release amongst the crap the studio's trying to get rid of.
Yeah, man, this is just taking me back. I'm looking at January. This was the era of We Don't Know What to Do with James Franco. You got Tristan and Isolde, and two weeks later you have Annapolis.
Oh, man, those are like the definition of January dumping movies.
Yeah.
Like, it just... Tristan and Isolde. Oh my god. Franco was in a lot of weird movies. Anyway,
Franco, that was after Spider-Man, and they were like, is this guy anything? And then like people were like, figured out he was funny, and then figured out he was weird, and then we figured out he was too weird, and we had to put a stop to it.
Back to Final Destination 3. Mary Elizabeth Winstead is really good in this movie.
Oh, she's great.
She's really great.
She's
great in everything.
This was around the same time as Sky High, so this was kind of her like her intro to move, like her kind of coming onto the main stage, and she's just been in stuff for 20 years and is always really good. Like, she's a really good lead. I won't say the cast is forgettable, because some of the characters are kind of fun. Like, they're all a bunch of just various mid-aughts douchebags. You've got the, like, kind of punk goth jerks. You've got the what I can only describe as the negative, the film negative of Ben Affleck in Dazed and Confused, in the guy who's, like, stuck around 2 years after graduation, but he's just, no one likes him.
No one likes
and
him. He's
just
wandering around with his
just a
with his
sexual
camera.
Predator.
You've got the tanning bed girls. You've got all of them are just various shades of horrible people.
Well, I kind of like the tanning bed girls because they're trying so hard to be nice people, but they can't help but constantly praise themselves on how wonderful they are. I think that the initial. I honestly think the movie gets better after you get past the roller coaster sequence, because the roller coaster sequence is kind of one of the, in my opinion, I haven't seen all of these. I haven't seen the latter two, but of the first four movies, it's kind of the weakest of the opening disasters. Like, because Final Destination 2 has the freeway crash.
That's the freeway crash,
which is just
incredible.
Like, one of the most insane things ever staged. And this, by comparison... I honestly, the first sequence, it was too much CG. like yeah. that early 2000s kind of sweaty yeah. CG, and it was weirdly bloodless for a lot of it. And I was starting to wonder, I was like, is this like the PG-13 one that I forgot about? Like, because this is kind of the forgotten one. People think of the first yeah. two are kind of the two Ali Larder ones, and then the latter two after this are the 3D ones, and then there's the new one. This is kind of the one that's in the middle that gets kind of forgotten about a little bit.
Well, and I think it's kind of a forgettable movie. I mean, I had a lot of fun watching this, but it's kind of a forgettable movie as like it goes. You kind of know the shape of it like from minute one. There's nothing about it that's like particularly surprising.
I don't think it has any new spin to offer. Right. Like, I guess sometimes it's the twist is how do you outwit death in the end? And it was a little convoluted in this one, in that she like killed someone trying to kill her, and that maybe right. did it. And it's like the best of these movies have Tony Todd show up to like explain it to you.
Personified death,
and,
right?
And, well, yeah. he's just like, I know exactly what's happening, and I'm going to explain it, and you're going to believe me because I'm Tony Todd.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. So the rules get a little muddy, and the sequences after the roller coaster derailment, the sequences are not all that memorable.
The tanning bed's pretty good.
The tanning one.
The tanning bed's pretty good because it's pure Rube Goldberg.
Right.
It is like, you know what's going to happen, and they're really milking it. That was the point where I was like, oh, I remember iPods. Oh, I remember CDs. And then after that, I was like, I was just like, oh, okay, this movie knows what it has a sense of humor about itself. And I think yes. they all do. They all have a pretty good sense of humor about it, which I think is also a byproduct of Scream, because the Scream movies were all very self-aware,
very funny. And this movie is very, very self-aware, except for Mary Elizabeth Winstead's performance, which is so earnest, and like it's almost jarring in how like earnest she plays it.
Well, there's not really a comic relief character. There's the two right. the two goths that work at Home Depot, and that's another great set piece. That one is pretty good.
That's true.
It's the movie itself. Death has a sense of humor.
Right.
Like as a killer, death is like, death is explaining to the audience what it's setting up. But you also never know exactly what's going to kill them. Like, you think you know, and then suddenly she's like got a billion arrows shot into the, or nails shot into the back of her head. Which was, when the practical effects are on point in this, they're
really great.
Cutting from the tanning beds to the coffins was pretty good. That was pretty good.
That was really solid.
Why were they burying them next to each other? I don't
They were just such good friends.
Don't they have family? Like a family plot?
There's so much. I had a blast watching this, but it is like kind of a forgettable movie.
No, I mean, as a part three, it's a real like, we got to keep this franchise going. Like,
is there anything left in this tank? Let's keep going.
The ending is just ambiguous enough that you could bring the characters back. It doesn't muck around with the mythology too much, but this is just a franchise that's all about it. This is like a real slasher franchise, because it is clear you go in thinking of deaths. You think of your set pieces, and you build the movie around that. That's Friday the 13th. That's Nightmare on Elm Street. This is right in line with those. It's just you can have a much, much bigger scale when it comes to the death and destruction if you want.
Yeah, and you can go wild with it. It actually, I think in that sense, it kind of mirrors the Nightmare on Elm Street idea. Instead of sort of going into these weird fantasy sequences, it's just sort of like, well, what can we do? Can we do it on a, you know, on a highway? Can we do it with a plane? Can we do it on the, you know,
suspension bridge?
And then the space needle is the new one,
it's
right?
Like rotating restaurant, you know. It's great. They're a lot of fun because they're like a little bit disaster movie,
right?
They're a little bit supernatural, they're kind of slasher movies, and there's also like this one. This is one of those things. I feel like this is a late to mid-aught slasher trope when you haven't gotten anyone back from the prior movie. I did some digging on the internet.
Right.
I looked up on the internet. This happened before, you know.
Yeah, it's so funny now to watch, with the ubiquity of smartphones, to watch a movie from 2006, not even like the 80s or the 70s when the cell phones didn't exist at all, but when people did have cell phones, but they couldn't use them for anything but phones.
Yeah, phones and texts and voicemails.
And a camera, yeah. Like a really, like the fact that Mary Elizabeth Winstead is walking around with like the digital cameras.
Yeah, and the other guy's got his little, he's got his little Sony handy cam.
Yeah, it's like, oh my God. I don't know why, it doesn't occur to me when I'm watching older movies when there are no cell phones, but when I'm watching the movie where it's in that in-between period.
There's nothing you couldn't port over. It's all it's just she'd still be taking photos and you could still have the Omen lift with the stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
In the, like,
she'd have a smartphone.
Death has a real sense of humor. It's like, it's not just he's going to put like a shadow through you like in the Omen. It's like, nope, I've got a bunch of clues.
I've got clues.
There's hands. There's an ice cream cone.
It's like he's,
you know,
the Joker, the Riddler.
Yeah, you need Adam West to figure it out.
It is so funny, and it is so funny that Mary Elizabeth Winstead figures it out so fast, too. She's like, I've got it. This is it. And everyone, to the movie's credit, everyone thinks she's nuts. Like, no one takes her remotely seriously, because in the real world, you wouldn't. You'd
no.
be like, you are a crazy person.
Yeah, even the guy that comes to her with the, like, learned about the first two movies, even then suddenly, 20 minutes later, he doesn't believe her. He's like, yeah, I know that stuff happened, but let's not go crazy. And I'm like, you know, spackle over that rewrite, I can tell.
Yeah, you did the research on the internet, my guy. What is the? Why are you doubting this now?
I mean, I just think if someone said, oh my God, it's going to crash. It's going to crash horribly. Get me off. And then it crashes. You might have, the cops keep letting them go.
That's true. That is true. None of them were. They are never ever suspected for anything.
There are no parents in this universe. Her and Amanda Crew, do they have parents? Like, did I miss something? Are they orphans? Like, where are their parents?
They talk about them, but they're not.
With the exception of the guy who runs the roller coaster and the guy that owns the tanning salon, there are no grown ups to go to, which makes me like. I know this one wasn't the X-Files one, but I'm just like, this just feels like a universe where you need to slot in two FBI agents sort of figuring things out.
Yeah. You need, or some sort of detectives sort of going around and investigating it. It would sort of add a little oomph to the movie.
Well,
again,
that's where Tony Todd comes in. That's where your end credit comes in. And he's not in the. He's in this one, but he's not. He's the voice of the roller coaster,
right?
And the train at the end, so he gets that. This is the end of the line.
Oh right, yeah. I mean, there's not much to really talk about in terms of like themes or anything in this movie. It's all about the set.
I read about James Wong wanted the theme to be about control. And a sense of control, which they talk about, they touch upon, for sure. Yeah. Like
she talks about it a lot, actually. In almost every scene, she's like, I'm a control freak. I need to have control.
But she's just so, like, the movie itself is winking and fun, but the characters are so earnest and serious, especially Mary Elizabeth Winstead. You almost want her to be, like, going a little crazier.
You know? Yeah, well, and it's not her performance, really. It's the way that the character's written is that she kind of only has, like, two speeds, which is, like, freaking out or, like, deeply sad. And it would be nice if she was a little more, you know, getting the conspiracy corkboard out and sort of really going crazy with it, like you said.
Yeah, but I think maybe at this point I'm so used to her being an adult. She's like being like the adult in movies that it's like I'm like in, seeing her around all these like 2005 kids. I'm just like she's too grown up for this.
She should know better.
Yeah, she's not freaking out because she's in control. She's done this before, you know. She's
yeah. I mean, you know, in 2005 she was in Sky High and she was playing. She's like our age, I think, or maybe a couple years older.
Yeah,
she's
give or take. Well, if she was doing High School Kids in 2005, then she was probably like 36 at the time. So She is 40, born November 28th, 1984. So she's your contemporary, Will.
She's my age. All right. But yeah, so I know that she had done stuff before, but I found out about her from Sky High, and then she was in this, and then the next year she was in Death Proof.
Yep, and she came back to work with James Wong for the Black Christmas remake, which is an insane movie if you've ever seen it. It's like,
because that's the one with an actual evil Santa, right?
Or is no, that you're thinking of Silent Night, Deadly Night. Black Christmas is the sorority house, and the original is the one with Olivia Hussey and Margot Kidder,
right?
Because it's Canadian, but it's the remake is like, what if we explain the killer? In his backstory is incredibly fucked up, and it's the goriest thing you've ever seen, and it's just a lot going on in that movie, like Christmas cookies made of skin, things like that.
Well, because that would have been in the torture porn era,
yeah, this is 2006,
right?
She did those. She did Live Free or Die Hard. She did and then Scott Pilgrim, and then she did like Smashed, and that was kind of her saying, I'm not in high school anymore.
Right.
Like when Brittany Snow did X and was like, I don't want to play a high school kid for another 20 years.
I don't want to play college or high school kids anymore. I'm done. I'm a grown up. I'm an adult now.
I mean, it is a fun movie. I was expecting to kind of be bored out of my gourd, but I was having
too.
A good time, because it's like the movie moves you from set piece to set piece at a pretty decent clip. I'd say honestly the weakest one is kind of the climax, where it all seems to hinge on repeatedly spooking the same horse.
That got a little repetitive, and it was like, this is the best we could do, guys.
I like her sister's getting dragged by the neck, and like the solution.
Yeah, my God, that was.
I guess
really
if we
crazy.
Just see if we can get the horse to stop.
It's like, that's all we got. The weight room scene, though.
Oh, that was amazing.
It's deliriously unhinged.
Because I think it is at that point the movie's like, okay, we're just going to be crazy and just over edit because because it's leaning so hard on the swords, and everyone in the room seems to know, like, she knows it's going to be the swords, but everyone's crazy and screaming about the Bruins, and then it's not the swords, and then that gets you the head smashing bit, they get everything that they need to get right for a theater going experience.
Exactly. Yeah, I can imagine seeing this movie in a crowd with a crowd would probably have been like a great time.
Yeah, and it's not like it's got these big gore splatter moments, but it's not like the torture porn stuff. It's not Hostel or Saw, which is trying to make you continuously uncomfortable. It's a roller coaster ride, if you will.
It really is. You know, the movie it actually reminded me the most of that we have covered is The Paranormal Activity 3 is kind of what it felt like.
Increasing stakes of Paranormal Activity.
Paranormal Activity.
ghost nonsense.
Yeah, but I mean, that's sort of what it felt like. And as like a part three, that's kind of what it felt like too. It sort of felt like we're just doing a really solid entry. We're not trying to rewrite the book. We're not trying to add any lore. This is Final Destination,
they do
the
a
third one.
Really good job. How they handle death as the antagonist in these movies is really well done, because it's not overtly supernatural. It's not like, it doesn't feel like demonic possession or even like the force in the Evil Dead. But at the same time, there's no physical, tangible, like personality to it. It's all in the edit. And I think they handle that really well. Like, it's just like, it's kind of just distilling. People love Rube Goldberg nonsense. And I think it's just leaning into that for gore in a really clever way.
Yeah, and I mean, and there's a lot of tension in these scenes, too. Like, you know something's going to happen, and they really do, like, build it before, and, like, it really is like going up on a roller coaster, and then it all happens, and you go down, and then you go back up again. It's, I mean, that's how it functions. It's Yeah, I mean, it is exactly what it is. It's not trying to do anything more than that, and that's okay.
Yeah, as threequels go, I'd say it kept the franchise alive. It did really well. Like, it made like $120 million. It was a nice, fat, beginning of the year hit for New Line at the time. Right. So,
yeah. Well, I mean, it makes sense. They made, what, two more in the sort of the 2000s, and then, of course, the most recent one.
Which also did pretty well.
That did pretty well, too. Yeah.
I think it's still a good concept. Like, yeah. I think we should be lifting more ideas from the X-Files, you know?
From unused X-Files scripts.
This is what you should take a season of the X-Files, take all the mythology stuff, and what that is now is a 6-episode series, because that's all you get now. And the other 20 monsters of the week should be $25 million movies each. And you've got a whole slate for like 2 years.
There you go. There you go. Sam, when you run your studio, I will go see you.
When
movies.
I get my turn to run Skydance, Warner Brothers, Paramount, whatever the fuck it's called.
Yes, yes. When you end up in the chair.
I will send my donation to the president's ballroom fund now, and we'll get the ball rolling on that. That would be funny, though, if you did one where it was the president. Actually,
that actually would be pretty cool. Like, I think that's a smart idea because there's so much you could do. There's
the president. It's not necessarily like an assassination attempt, but the president has a premonition and survives, I don't know, an Air Force One crash or something.
Right.
And that kills a bunch of other world leaders. And he's like,
and then he has to increasingly escape these ridiculous Rube Goldberg things.
And world leaders are getting killed in front of him, and the countries are getting upset.
Yeah, you can pull anything. I mean, you know, it's like he's reading to the kids at like a school, and then
there's not enough horror involving the president. How many are there horror movies with the president in them?
I don't think there are any
like
horror
Omen
3
kind of.
Right. I mean,
I think Chucky went to the White House on the Chucky series, but
okay, well,
but, like, not enough.
No.
We do action with the president.
Actually, a slasher movie set in the White House is not a terrible idea.
No.
Yeah. We should get on this.
Yeah.
We should make this happen.
I mean, go ahead. I have to edit, so. You get started. Use a fake name. Do not post it online. But yeah, I don't know. I think I would be happy to see this franchise keep going, especially if they start doing... if they wanted to get a little weird with it, do something a little crazier with it. That would be really fun.
And well, and this new one actually sounds kind of cool in the way that it's kind of, it bounces between timelines.
Yeah,
and stuff.
I like that.
I mean,
a lot.
I think that kind of sounds really fun.
Actually, you know what franchise is kind of similar to it is the Smile movies.
Oh yeah.
Cause that is like, it's a demonic entity where if it gets you to kill yourself, but if someone witnesses you die, then it's passed on to them.
Right.
And it goes from there. And I don't want to spoil the movies, but it's like, that's over two movies just getting increasingly crazy.
Crazier.
Stakes. Definitely a more psychological thing, a little more ambitious in what it's trying to do, but really good movies.
Yeah,
if they make a third one, we'll be there.
We'll cover it. Yeah, I mean, it looked really fun. I never got around to the second one, but
we've got kids.
Or the first
I got kids.
One,
yeah, I saw so, yeah. I saw the Springsteen movie because I'm a dad, and I have to see that by dad law. And we'll see the Predator movie in a couple weeks.
Yeah, that you also have to see by dad law.
I have to see that by nerd law and bro law.
Nerd dad law.
Nerd dad bro. And because it's L. Fanning millennial law.
There you go.
Yeah. And we can't.
Does L. Fanning count as a millennial? I guess she does.
Well, she's.
Yeah.
She's not a. I don't think. I think. Well, no, I don't think either of them are millennials. Are they?
Well, they're
probably. Because
Dakota
was like a kid when we were in college.
Yeah,
so
but
L
I guess they count as young millennials. They wouldn't be Gen Z, right? The Fanning sisters.
1994 is Dakota. What's a millennial? When do millennials stop?
When does the millennial...
96.
All right, so...
She's a baby millennial, and L is... elder Gen Z.
There you go.
All right. All right. I'm glad we got that sorted out.
It's very important. Very relevant.
Hey,
to,
I'm excited for Predator Badlands.
I am very excited for Predator Badlands.
I'm sad we
as
can't
well.
Do a Predator episode because we covered them all already.
We did.
And this one's not a... I don't know what this one is.
I guess you could call it the third Predator, the third Dan Trachtenberg Predator movie, because you know he did
true.
Prey, Killer
yeah.
Killers, and Badlands. It's a very squeeze,
but like but... all of them are sequels to Predator,
right?
So like, and probably Predator 2 now, which I think is the Belloc theory of this watch is worthless, but if we bury it in the desert long enough, it becomes priceless. I think Predator 2's withstood the test of time, so we've come around to liking it.
Well, it's the only one that they reference, pretty much. I go, Killer of Killers kind of references Predators, kind of, but really the only one that they ever reference outside of the first one is the
I think it's Exorcist 3 syndrome. It's just like nothing else has come along that's nearly as good in terms of sequels.
Yeah. I mean, I have an affection for Predators, but yeah. But I think you put it this way. I think when we were talking on FM's podcast, one of those episodes, I think you said there's really probably no difference between Predator 2 and Predators. They probably occupy about the same space.
And it's just like there's no difference between Ghostbusters 2 and Ghostbusters 2016.
Right.
Just one of them has those guys you like in them, and the other one doesn't.
Exactly.
But
yeah.
It's I mean, Predator 2, we've talked about this. Final Destination 3, the Final Destination movies, you know what's happening before the characters. And that
right.
creates suspense and comedy and anticipation and a great payoff. Predator 2, you know what's happening before the characters, but that's just, like, bad writing.
Yeah, it was premise relitigation, basically.
Correct. Thank you. I like that expression. Yes,
where you just have to wait for the characters to catch up. And here, because the supernatural force that's killing everybody is this Rube Goldberg, is basically like cinema itself. It's like the editing itself. It can create tension.
Yeah,
but that doesn't really work when you're like, yeah, I know he's being hunted by this alien. I saw the first movie. It's called Predator 2. I know what I'm seeing.
Yeah, we know what this is.
Yeah.
And it's, it's such a simple concept because it's so, even in the first one, it's so easy to grasp. You cheated death and death is coming after you.
Yeah.
And death loves to knock a few things over in a precise order to kill you in the most hilarious way possible.
But what's so funny about it is that it's not really related into the way that they were supposed to die in the first place. Like
it's like the order that they died.
Yeah,
no,
it's the
yes,
order.
They,
it
no
doesn't
one
really
di-
matter.
The first two movies, well, not the first movie because it's just one plane crash and the plane blows up. The second one has like an elaborate, everyone dies in different ways and it's like this really drawn out sequence. In this one, it all happens so fast and no one has like a good splat death really.
The football player does, though.
Yeah, he kind of does.
His
yeah.
head kind of, like, pops against a post, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's I think like, if they maybe... Yeah. Well, you know what? If you made it... I think in this one, they're trying so hard to surprise you with exactly what kills them at the end that if you laid that pipe in at the beginning, it might undercut the surprise a little bit.
That's true. Yeah, that is a good point.
Yeah.
That's a good point.
It's like if he overtly had his head crushed in by two things on either side on the roller coaster, then it wouldn't come as a shock when he does it. I mean, it would still be pretty good. It's, you know.
But you don't want these things to be too predictable. You want them to, because I think, like you say, in that deeply weird workout scene, it's like, oh, it's the swords. The swords are going to fall on him and kill him.
Yeah,
and
but there's also like there's a boom box next to a puddle of water, you know.
Right. Yeah, it's like the... It really does sort of play with your expectations, and it actually brings a lot of humor and suspense out of it. It's pretty impressive.
No, you can see why. I mean, yeah, these are X-Files guys. You can see that influence in there because X-Files always had a sense of humor, and it was really good at doing those like monster of the week deaths. All like, you know, they had to do 20 of them a season.
I do think we've lost something moving away from the 20 episode seasons.
Yeah,
I think,
residuals.
Well,
no,
I mean, other than that,
people
but
want
no.
that. People want
no.
like people are, remember when suddenly everyone started watching Suits?
Right.
People want to watch The Pit. They want to see like we they. if you could bring back 24 right now and clean the fuck up. Remember when they tried to reboot 24 and it was only 12 episodes a season and people were like, get the fuck out of here. What is this shit?
What is this, 12? Come on.
Yes, I mean, look, studios don't want to put in the time and money, but I do think there's an audience. You think of the things that are hitting both on TV and in theaters, I think people want a lot of medium-sized good as opposed to a few huge mediocres and bads. Like, they don't want Tron Ares. They want Final Destination Bloodlines. They don't want, you know, like, they don't want, like, just another humongous superhero movie, but they're going to get them, whether they like it or not. But they don't necessarily want that. They want, you know, The Pit. They want just, like, something fun they can watch week to week that they can talk about. The binge watch is dead.
Yeah.
You know, streaming TV is that the dream is over, you know.
But on a more, you know, I mean, I absolutely agree with everything you're saying.
Let me rant.
You go ahead, Sam. I'll let you finish your rant. Sorry.
No, I still have a hope of working in this town. I don't want to burn all my bridges.
But I think as we're moving away from those 20 episodes or 26 episode seasons, like, you know, X-Files writers, it's like you kind of lose that skill set of, like, building a, you know, an episodic story.
And also building, like, X-Files had its serialized stuff, but that wasn't the show's strength. The strength was in the characterization and just, or like another good one. Like, I really like Star Trek Strange New Worlds, but this season, this latest season, had like a bunch of gimmicky episodes. Like, there was an episode that was a documentary, and there was, you know, they do a musical episode, they do a crossover episode with Lower Decks, and, you know, they're fun, but then you realize I'm only getting like 12 episodes a season, not 26. So I'm not getting a lot of that just, like, straight-up good Star Trek. Like, you can, like, you can go back
the more
and
dramatic
watch,
episodes, like, the more, like, and because you would get sort of, like, one episode where the holodeck would go insane, and then the next episode it would be, like, we're exploring a new species of bug.
Yeah.
Or whatever. I mean,
just sci-fi stories, you know? Yeah. And it's...
Put something out there that people want to see.
People went to see this.
Yeah.
$118 million for a movie today would be a big success.
And people went to see the new one, too.
Yeah.
It's like...
like, college students, give them a reason to go to the movies in February when they're bored as shit. It's 14 degrees out in most of the country, and they want to do something for 2 hours. Give them a reason. If only there was a movie about building a baseball diamond that had a line that could sum this up. How did this get us going on such a more deeper dive than Maxine?
A movie that's actually about the industry.
Overtly about the... I think I was really tired when I did that episode. I liked Maxine a lot, but I was just kind of like, I just want to get through this. So
well,
I
but, again, but you know what? I just
want to get to the easy movie that's just going to be a roller coaster crash. It's not going to challenge me in any way.
But I think the thing is Maxine also had, like, a lot of stuff going on in it that, I mean, we touched on some of this stuff.
Yeah,
in that episode.
There was a lot more going on in the movie itself to talk about. But the best movies we watch are the ones where we only have 20 minutes of talking points, and then we go on a crazy tangent.
Yeah.
How old is Elle Fanning? Let's look
at it. Does Elle Fanning count as a millennial? I don't know.
But hey, she doesn't. And I didn't know that until tonight.
And you wouldn't have had we not gone on that tangent.
Will,
so,
October is over. Halloween is soon to be passed, and the holiday season is upon us. What would you like to watch next? Because I don't have a plan.
Oh, holy fuck, I don't either.
I have an idea. Like, I have one.
All right. Well, if you've got an idea, let's hear it. Let's hear it.
We've gotten it kind of easy the last few movies. We've had a lot of, like, 90-minute movies. Return of the King?
I think we gotta do it.
We gotta crack out one of the big guns.
We gotta either do Return of the King or Godfather. I think that's the...
This is the thing with Return of the King. There's not much left to say. It's kind of like talking about Revenge of the Sith. But it is... This is, like, an incredible movie and an incredible achievement. And this is the one that you can really feel the burnout just sneaking up over the hill, you know, for this trilogy.
Yep. Yeah. No, I love to talk about those movies. I adore that trilogy.
They're such an achievement. Speaking of, like, this is what we were talking about when we were dressed like the kids in Final Destination 3.
We were talking about Lord of the Rings and Star Wars, because Revenge of the Sith had come out this past summer.
But I just remember, like, I'm not a Lord of the Rings geek. Like, I knew, I read The Hobbit. I've tried to read Lord of the Rings, the books, and they're just very, very dense to me.
But
those movies coming out were like nothing anyone had seen.
Or attempted, and just the way, like, how sophisticated it was. I mean, they were treated like they were big dramas, like a Godfather, in the way that they were made, and fantasy movies just weren't done that way.
You think of the stuff from the 80s, or you think of, like, Dungeons and Dragons came out from the same studio, like, within a year of Fellowship of the Ring, and it's just, you know, like...
I mean, even the first Harry Potter movie, which came out that same year as the Fellowship of the Ring, doesn't feel like the Lord of the Rings movies.
There's still that one's still leaning on, like, this is whimsical, you know, and even the sort of lighthearted stuff in Lord of the Rings just feels so incredibly, like, heavy and real, and I think so much of that is, and part of that is we know so much about the making of these movies. There was just such a TLC that went into the first trilogy, which will probably lead us to talk about the second trilogy, which is another conversation.
Oh no, Sam, that means I'm going to have to watch all three Hobbit movies. I've only seen the first one.
Oh, you got homework, bitch.
Oh no. Wait, are we doing a twofer? Are we going to do Return of the King and then do the Hobbit?
There's a third Hobbit, motherfucker.
I think we have to. All right. That'll take us
to the end of the year. Merry Christmas, ass.
Oh, no. All right.
No,
all right.
Look, for whatever else, there will be plenty to talk about with the Hobbit movies, I assure you.
No, I've seen the Lindsay Ellis videos about them, and I've seen, what's her name, say, why does it hurt so much? So, like, several times. So.
And you'll ask me when we talk about it, and I will tell you, because it was real.
I saw that first Hobbit movie and it gave me a migraine because we saw it in the high frame rate.
Oh yeah, let's get Return of the King. Let's get that out of the way. We got a battle of five armies to talk about. We're back, baby.
Enough of these 90-minute what have you.
Enough of these movies we love and these movies that don't make us think too hard. It's time for some deep hurting.
Talk about cinematic hubris at its finest.
We've only watched one 3-hour movie, and it's The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly. We need to take our medicine.
Well, I mean, to be fair, Return of the King's a good one.
No, Return of the King is exceptional. You know, it's... Oh, before we go, 1, 2, 3. How many stars we giving? This is a nice, well earned 2 stars.
Yep, I think that's my feeling too.
Best possible version of middle of the road.
Exactly, it does exactly what it wants to do. It's not trying to do anything else, and it is a good example of what it is, and that's it.
All right, what can you add to that? Well, folks, we will see you next time for Lord of the Rings: The Return of the King. And followed up soon after by The Hobbit, The Battle of Five Armies. But until then, Will, this was fun. This was good. We didn't do as many Shrequel threequels this season, but we did a couple of good double feature here.
Yeah, and I had a blast watching this. And I didn't, like you said, I didn't expect I would.
I never felt
sad
or bad, you know?
Yeah, exactly. I was like, this was fun. And then and I will probably never think of it again after this episode.
I'd like to, at some point, if we start bringing on some more guests, if they want to revisit stuff we've already talked about, I'd be fine with that. I seriously doubt One of our many fellow Tuesday morning screening room friends is going to want to talk about this especially, but you never know.
But no, and yeah, I think so too. Especially our earlier episodes, we were sort of finding our feet and the format, I think.
Oh no, we're going to have to talk about Army of Darkness again. Oh no.
Twist my arm.
Oh no. oh yes, and Will and I were speaking of the Tuesday morning screening room. We were back on the on FM show last week. You can check us out. We were talking all about our old friends, the Universal Monsters. We did a five movie deep dive. Most of them I already have forgotten about, but we did talk about we talked about Son of Frankenstein. We talked about Frankenstein Meets the Wolfman. You know, it's always always. As we've said many times, the Universal Monsters are an anchor for us.
And they're always fun to talk about.
Yeah,
and FM's great. And if you have not checked out his podcast, you should absolutely check it out.
Yeah, it's great stuff. He's knocking them out of the park every week. Anyway, folks, until next time, I hope you're having a good retail rollover from Halloween to the holidays, and we will see you next time with The Lord of the Rings, The Return of the King, and until then, Will, happy Halloween.
Happy Halloween. Spooky, scary.
Halloween. Play us out, Connell Cochran.
Shamrock.
Good night, everybody.
Adios.